Cyber and Commerce will now come to order. It's 4:40 on April Fool's Day, April 1st. President, we have Representative Ledoux, Representative Tilton, Representative Hughes, Representative Josephson, Representative Keto, myself, Chair Olson, and we do have a quorum to conduct business. We ran over in on floor session today, and the purpose of this meeting briefly is to here for the first time, House Bill 271, Money Services Business Requirements. We're going to get a brief summary of the bill, and then we are waiting on a CSO. By having the meeting today, we can bring it back up anytime as soon as we get it next week, because we have bills previously heard scheduled till the end of the session. And to present the bill today, we have Kevin Anselm, who will be a familiar face, and she's been spending a lot of time here. And you have our undivided attention.
Thank you, Chair Olson, and good afternoon, everyone. My name is Kevin Anselm, Director of the Division of Banking and Securities, and I'm here today with an overview of House Bill 271, the Alaska Money Services Act. In your packet, you have a copy of House Bill 271. You've already heard that there's a CS in process. There's a sectional analysis that will probably change a bit with the CS. There's a white paper, and then there's this PowerPoint. And that's what I'm going to go through today, is briefly give you an overview of what money services businesses are and what you can expect to see in the bill. And so oftentimes the first thing that people wonder is, what is a money services business? Well, it's either currency exchange or money transmission. And both of those things can be involved in a money services business. Currency exchange means the receipt of revenues from exchange of money of one government for money of another government. That's often called fiat currency. And money transmission means the selling or issuing of payment instruments. Payment instruments includes checks, money orders, traveler's checks, prepaid or stored value cards, like, for instance, a reloadable Visa card that you might buy for a family member and initially load with $100 and then plan to add additional dollars to it at some point. It also means sending money via Western Union, I don't know, from Alaska to Mexico, or moving money from a deposit account to a loadable card. What HB 271 does is to modernize the Act to update the definition of money transmission to include virtual currencies. And we'll talk a little bit about virtual currencies.
Is that bitcoins?
Yes. Along with about, I think the last count I had was about 69 other virtual currencies that are out there. If you'd like to see a list, if you just go to Wikipedia and look up virtual currencies, you'll get the current list and what they're called. And of course, Bitcoin is on there.
And we'll pass that out at the next meeting.
The other point is to incorporate alternative payment systems and instruments, and those can be any sort of medium of exchange, and that can include things like Apple Pay, you've seen Square, those are different sorts of payment systems, and so we need to add those all into our law. They're not there right now. And it'll be clear with House Bill 271.
Would this have an impact on things like faith-based group medical reimbursement?
I don't think so.
Where everybody gets together, and if there's a claim, they prorate it out amongst the members?
No, that sounds a lot more like insurance to me. I think somebody might argue
the Division of Insurance probably doesn't want to think that way.
Okay, but I won't say anything. Lori will have my hide. One of the things about virtual currency and the money services bill and why this is important is back in 2007 when this law was originally passed, virtual currency was not really even a gleam out there in the miners' eyes, and these are the folks that go in and do the electronic mining, and we were pretty certain that it wasn't part of the legislative thoughts when the bill was passed. So at this point, the division and the department has taken the stand that we don't regulate virtual currency, and this is a common stand across the country, that until you have the opportunity to actually see what virtual currency is and decide if you want to regulate it.
Representative Ledoux.
Maybe I'm the only one who doesn't know what this is. What exactly is virtual currency?
Well, through the chair, Representative Ledoux, it's described as a number of things. It's a digital representation of value, and it is mined using a particular algorithm, mined through a computer program, using an algorithm. So it's a mathematical formula, and they go out and search these things out, and apparently the virtual currency is a limited number of these, and we're going to talk about Bitcoin here because that's what we know most about, a limited number of these Bitcoins that can be mined over time.
So it's available any place in the world. You wouldn't, but the only thing you would have, I think, is an access number and the security code.
It's true. One of the things that is true about the virtual currencies is it's one of those secret sorts of currencies. People aren't identified by anything other than a number, and that number isn't necessarily attached to a name. So this is some of the currencies that you hear talked about with the Silk Road and used for untoward sorts of transactions that the people who are making them may not want them followed. But I will tell you that Bitcoin is alive and well in Alaska and is being used. And it's actually been, if you've been around here in June, you will see advertisements in windows as we trade Bitcoin.
Okay. Representative Ledoux.
So, currency is usually, there's underneath currency, like gold or the full faith and credit of a country. So what does Bitcoin have to say that it's worth anything? Why is it worth anything?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, because someone thinks it is.
I'd like to know we've been joined by Representative Colbert.
Thank you. I guess one of the things I would say, I think the mining component, when you've got Bitcoin, really it's the scarcity, like a commodity, like you're going looking for gold. There's a scarcity to the gold, which gives it value. And by not just having billions of Bitcoins out there, people seek them out and they have value.
So,
Representative Ledoux?
So somebody just created them, and then they got a bunch of people to think that they were worth something, and because they got a bunch of people to think they're worth something, they're worth something.
And then the guy that invented it got in trouble.
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, in essence, yes, but I mean, a commodity, I'll kind of move to a different area. If someone thinks it's worth a lot for a short time, it will be. I don't know if you're familiar with the story about tulips in Holland, the Netherlands, thank you. All of a sudden people thought that tulips were very, very valuable, and one tulip bulb could sell for many, I forget what their denomination of money was at the time.
Voters.
Thank you. So I should let you guys tell the story. You remember all the terms. Thank you. So anyway, people would be able, they would buy and sell these tulips on an exchange, and they would become, you know, worth more and more and more until somebody finally said, well, that's not good, and then it imploded.
Interesting.
But I don't know if that'll happen with Bitcoin or not, but the deal is we need to decide whether we want to regulate it so that we can make sure and put some laws around it and some safeguards and let consumers, make sure the consumers know what they're getting into.
But if it helps, I think there's a finite number of Bitcoins, and the price, depending on what currency you want it to be in, fluctuates dramatically. So there's a speculation element, I think, involved to it.
Why are there a finite number of them?
Because if they could keep making them, they'd have no value.
Can they keep making them, though?
Theoretically not.
So they're kind of used where you might not want the government to know what you're doing. They're kind of like a tech version of a Swiss bank account.
To the chair, Representative Ledoux, you have it.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Bank accounts are not that secure anymore.
I know. Well, I've heard.
Whoops. So, be besides the virtual currency piece and the alternative payment systems, it also, the changes in the law would allow licensees to contract with a delegate who may then use their network of sub-delegates to reload funds onto prepaid cards without having to have a separate contract. And we'll talk about why that's so important in Alaska because of our rural communities in just a moment. And then finally, the bill would remove the out-of-state business advantage that allows applicants licensed in another state to submit minimal information and pay only half the fee an entity headquartered in Alaska pays. And that was an anomaly in the original bill. So what it does for current money service businesses is it simplifies the licensing process. It requires the use of the nationwide multi-state system and registry called the NMLS, and those of you who have worked with the money service businesses, with mortgage, know that the NMLS is out there and has been very helpful for both the state and licensees. The bill also replaces the net worth requirement with a surety bond requirement that can be adjusted based on the risk that's presented by the licensee's business model and focus. So you can imagine that with Bitcoin, we're looking at having a higher bonding requirement. We think there could be additional problems there. And then also allows an annual assessment fee that'll cover periodic examination fees and ongoing administrative costs. The net worth requirement is currently $25,000, and that means that somebody has to have that in place. With the bond, then they can probably spend less money and have even more coverage in place without having that capital tied up.
Representative Ledoux.
Can we go back to Bitcoin for just a second?
Bitcoin.
So there's this new marijuana industry where there's been some concern, for example, about how they might pay their taxes, and banking is very difficult for this industry. Could Bitcoin be part of the solution to that?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, I don't know. Bitcoin is not recognized as a currency. The state would have to figure out if they would want to accept Bitcoin in payment for taxes. There's a whole trading mechanism, and then if that were the case, we would need to be involved as far as making sure that virtual currency is appropriately regulated and we could go in and check on these things. And so this bill would be important in that. But whether or not that is someplace the state wants to go with the marijuana industry, I can't answer that. I can say that right now we're not regulating it.
I believe it was part of the Silk Road, though. Mm-hmm. But that was the underground economy, not the legalized economy. But I think if you go to Wikipedia and Google Silk Road, you'll find the history of not only the website where you could buy literally anything in the world with bitcoins, but also the history of bitcoins, because that was the only currency I believe that they accepted. It was shut down a few or 2 years ago,
right.
3 years ago.
So I take it this isn't just a brilliant new idea that I've just come up with.
Rosine Hughes.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, I just looked up Bitcoin. Can I read just something off of here that might be helpful? Because this is new to me as well as it is to Representative Ledoux. And it's a bit of a bunny trail, but still I think it's important. This is Wikipedia. The use of Bitcoin by criminals has attracted the attention of financial regulators, legislative bodies, law enforcement, and media. Criminal activities are primarily centered around black markets and theft, though officials in countries such as the United States also recognize that Bitcoin can provide legitimate financial services. Bitcoin has drawn the support of a few politicians, notably U.S. Senator Rand Paul, who accepts donations in Bitcoin. I just thought that was quite interesting.
Please continue. You've got about 7 minutes.
7 minutes. Okay.
Well, we're going a little bit over. It's fine.
Okay. I was going to mention that there are some states that have already, they're already regulating virtual currencies. California is, New York came out with an entire regulatory scheme, and a number of other states.
Some states have decided that because it is a quote, a currency, that they will use their own definitions to make it work. So, quickly, and to, let's see, slide five, the bill will enhance consumer protection. It adds a background check component for all control persons and requires licensees to comply with federal laws. That includes Bank Secrecy Act and also the other amending transmission acts. It increases the record retention schedule from 3 to 5 years for all money service businesses, removes the advance exam notification requirement. In other words, we can go in and look at a firm without giving them 45 days notice. And it updates the enforcement provisions. And for businesses that aren't really in the money service business, there are some exemptions. If you're an insurance company, title company, escrow agent, or attorney that engages in money transmission that's ancillary to your business, then you're out. You don't have to worry about dealing with the Money Services Act. Slide six, electronic payments. We talked a little bit already about what payment instruments are. One of the things we didn't mention is a mobile wallet. And that's something that you're starting to hear that you put on your smartphone or other device that you can just pay with your iPhone.
Mm-hmm. So it gives us the ability to not only lose our wallet but lose our phone at the same time?
apparently, yeah, that would do it. Stored value cards, and this I do want to go over a little bit so that you understand why some of the provisions are so important to our local Alaska money transmitters. Prepaid cards that are both open loop and reloadable, and those are important terms. Open loop means that the monetary value is pre-funded and reduced at each use. It can also be increased by adding money from another account or another type of money. It includes an electronic device or vehicle. Can be a card code or some PIN number. It's redeemable at multiple unaffiliated merchants or ATMs. In other words, any place that Visa is accepted, probably this would be accepted. And does not include an electronic record that's primarily intended to be redeemed only for goods or services from a specific merchant. In other words, if it's just a Target card, it's just a Target card. It can only be used at Target. So here's an example of an open loop stored value card, and this is eight. Slide 8, an Olive Garden gift card is not reloadable. If it's a $50 card, it's a $50 card. And those cards do not require a money service business licensee to deal with those cards. But a Visa card that you get, for instance, at a Green Dot, and a Green Dot is a service center, for instance, at Fred Meyer or Walmart, and we'll talk more about them in a moment, you can go in and you can reload that card. You can either do it in person, or you can do it oftentimes over the phone. And just add funds from another source.
Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Culver.
Could we, in this legislation or these types of cards, like a gift card, like these Visa cards you're talking about, could we take off that expiration date because they typically are only good for so long and then the funding reverts to whoever sold the gift card or the preloaded Visa? Could we say in here that extend that period or have no period where those cards expire so that kind of is a consumer action?
Through
the chair, Representative Culver, gift cards and these reloadable cards are generally two different things. And I know that a lot of the gift cards do have an expiration date, three years from the date. This law does not cover those. Now, whether we could add something to cover those, and I know that there are some federal laws related to that. I know that I have staff watching the hearing right now, and we'll take a look at that and come back with you.
I think that's an area maybe of consumer protection that the committee might want to look at.
Representative Culver, I think I've been reminded by Representative Hughes that I think we looked at that several years ago. Representative Gatto, I believe, had the bill out, and I think there may have been a federal issue on it because it, two people remember it. So. I think it was a federal issue that ultimately stopped Representative Gatto from being able to do it, but we can certainly look at it.
Thank you. Move on.
Actually, Kevin Camporis.
We'll do some research. So on page 9 is the beginning of the white paper. There's actually a full white paper in your documents that go over what we're about to discuss. I'm going to talk with you about a particular licensee. It's Alaska Prepaid Card in Nome, Alaska. And I want to tell you how it works right now. And you're already seeing that it looks very complicated, and it is. We need to simplify this for our folks out in rural Alaska who use a lot of these prepaid cards out in rural areas, because they can purchase the prepaid cards in a supermarket, a village store, and a store's customer service account or counter. And these cards require a lot of identifying information, so they're in essence almost like, I hate to honest, a checking account in a card that you can reload, etc. And our rural residents oftentimes use these to pay bills because they have no way of either doing the banking that needs to be done to get bills somewhere, and these have become quite important. So the way that it works right now, Alaska Prepaid Card contracts with the Western Union Financial Services. So Alaska Prepaid Card is over there on the left. You'll see that they contract over there on the right with Western Union. Western Union has a number of delegates. In fact, there are 32 Alaskan store locations in Fred Meyer, Walgreens, and Safeway. So Western Union is a delegate for the Alaska prepaid cards and is in Nome. To stay in compliance with the current law that doesn't allow the use of a sub-delegate for any purchase, Alaska prepaid card must also contract with each one of those individual locations so that they can reload the Q card, as it's called. So the other problem with this, we were talking about bonding. The current law requires Alaska prepaid card to not only increase the amount of their bond to include Western Union, but also each one of those stores. So it gets to be pretty expensive. They have 32 locations. The current contract process, as you can see, is not only time-consuming and expensive for Alaska prepaid card, but that bonding requirement is really, really tough and expensive.
How much is the processing charge? What are the users getting back?
Percent? I'm sorry?
How much, on a percentage basis, how much is the user of the card getting hit for?
As far as the fees, there are different card fees for the different cards. I can come back with that information because we'll have it.
Yeah, I was just talking about the Alaska prepaid.
I'll get his specific figures on that.
Representative Hughes?
And right, as follow-up to that, if we streamline this, would that reduce the, possibly bring down the charge for the user? I mean...
Through the chair, Representative Hughes, it may... I can tell you that there are different charges for the different cards, and we were looking at all of those charges. So I'll prepare something to address those concerns, and whether it might be less or not, that would probably be a decision that the Q card would have to make.
Would that address the cash back, too, if they chose to get cash back? That would be a different charge, wouldn't it? Even though it was their own card?
Charleston, as I recall seeing the different kinds of prepaid cards, there are different kind of service fees for getting cash out. So we can give you a summary of those. So here's what the bill proposes as far as treatment of subdelegates. And truly, this is kind of an Alaska-centric issue. The proposed process improves on the current process by Alaska Prepaid Card maintaining their license. Western Union Financial Services remains as a delegate, but then Alaska Prepaid Card would enter into a separate contract with Western Union to create the licensee delegate relationship, but it would also include the ability for Alaska Prepaid Card to utilize the delegates of Western Union without having to separately contract. So you can see instead of having to have contracts with Western Union and 32 stores, it's with Western Union, and Western Union would be responsible for those delegates. So the box that I showed you earlier where the Olive Garden card still doesn't need a delegate, a licensee, or a subdelegate, The Visa Green Card would be a reloadable card. It requires an MSB license or delegate to issue a cell and requires either a licensee delegate or subdelegate to reload. But the subdelegate is with the delegate, so it stops a step. So I won't go into all of the various definitions that you'll see in the bill. We've talked about a number of them already. But you'll see a list here including money laundering, money transmission, open loop, stored value, subdelegate, and of course, our new favorite, virtual currency. Slide 12, this is an outline of the law sections, and we'll talk about those in more detail once we have the CS. We do enforcement against money service businesses. Since 2009, we've issued 18 money service businesses final orders, and while I can't, of course, get into current investigations, the majority of the MSB orders are related to unlicensed activity by unlicensed parties engaging in money transmission or currency exchange here in Alaska. We watch for fraudulent activity, and sadly, we have found some. Most of our money service businesses are out of state, and we do examine them out of state. We coordinate as we can with other states that are also interested in going in and seeing those same money service businesses. And we're talking everywhere from Google and PayPal to the small ones.
So do we have reciprocity with the number of other states on that?
Yes, we do.
Representative Culver?
Do we have any reporting requirements of fraud so we can kind of get an idea of what companies and where it's occurring and kind of the number and how big the problem is?
Through the chair, Representative Culver, we're in close contact with FinCEN, who will release that information to us, as well as the other states. And there is an ongoing organization that gets together and compares notes of state regulators and federal regulators.
I'll let you wrap up. We'll get into that when we get this back.
Actually, any last questions for Kevin?
I have
representatives.
Yeah, and back on page 3, it talked about removes the out-of-state business advantage, allows applicants licensed in another state to submit minimal information, pay only half the fee an entity headquartered in Alaska pays. Can you give an example? Is that like the Apple Pay, and what kind of increased fees might we see? Could you give an example of what out-of-state business might? Is this PayPal or?
It would be any money service business, and I can give you the specifics of what is happening right now with out-of-state money service businesses that have that special advantage, and it is a statutory advantage that Alaska gave them, and it's something that we're looking at repealing so that anybody who comes in gets to pay the same amount as Alaska businesses.
So it would be doubling the fees on those out-of-state. Do you know how much more that might bring into the state of Alaska? How much are we talking
about? Twice as much.
Through the chair, Representative Hughes, we have not set those fees yet. It would be an assessment. We're moving to an assessment so that we can better cover the costs of regulating this industry. We expect to do that in regulation, but I can probably at least tell you what's happening right now and what we expect might happen under this bill. Okay. So I always have to end with our mission statement. Our division's mission is to protect consumers of financial services and promote safe and sound financial systems, and that supports the department's mission to promote a healthy economy and support strong communities, as well as protect consumers in Alaska. So I'm happy to answer other questions.
Seeing none, you get off light. Thanks again, Kevin, and we'll be seeing you next week. And we just wanted to get the bill read across so we can do it. We're going to be running bills previously heard until the end of the regular session, and this will allow us not to have to wait a week to have you rescheduled or wait for the 24-hour rule. And with that, we will adjourn until tomorrow, 10 o'clock.
Tomorrow, right here.